Sit down, and maybe you'd like to grab a Bible. And if you can, turn to John chapter 10. John chapter 10 in your Bibles. New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke. And then you'll find John. John chapter 10. And we're going to read a very familiar passage. John chapter 10 and verse 10. John 10, 10. You can find that. And let's read this together. This is what it says. This is what Jesus says when he's talking to the people. It seems like he's using lots of different pictures and they're not getting the pictures. Because before this, he starts talking about, I'm a gate. And they all look at him blankly. A bit like Sunday morning, usually. A bit like, you know, they just look, what? Hey? What? And then he changes tack. And this is what he says. The thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose, verse 10, is to give life in all of its fullness. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd, as we've just sung, lays down his life for the sheep. A hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will leave the sheep because they aren't his and he isn't their shepherd. And so the wolf attacks them and scatters the flock. The hired hand runs away because he's merely hired and has no real concern for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep, and they know me. Just as my Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep too that are not in this sheepfold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock and one shepherd. Very familiar passage that you may have read many times before. We're in a series called The Pursuit of Happiness. We're talking about what is happiness and how do you get it, how do you hold on to it, how do you create happiness in your life. And one of the things that, if I'm honest, frustrates me and breaks my heart, and I suspect is similar for you, that winds you up a little bit and breaks your heart often. As a pastor, or for me as a pastor, or maybe as a friend, or as a member of a family, here's what frustrates you and breaks your heart. It's watching people that you know and love and care about undermine their own happiness. Isn't that so frustrating? It's like watching a car accident in slow motion. You ever seen it in people's lives? People you know and love, and you're watching what they're doing, and you're thinking, don't. But you're sort of powerless to do anything about it. You can't stop it. You watch them make decisions. Or you watch how they treat other people. And you know further down the line, this isn't going to be good. There are going to be consequences to this. It's going to undermine their happiness long term. It's not going to be immediate. It's never immediate trouble. Because let's face it, if we knew that if I do this, I'm immediately going to be in trouble, we wouldn't do it, would we? But because it's a long way down the line, we tend to fall for it and we still do it. We sow trouble. And that's a tragedy because if we're honest, there's enough unavoidable pain in this life, isn't there? This is a broken world. If you haven't worked that one out yet, that's the truth. This is a broken world and bad stuff happens to good people. And that some of it is unavoidable. I mean, there was an earthquake in Italy this week. Bad stuff happened to good people. They couldn't have avoided that. Nothing in their behavior over the last 20 years would have changed that. So there's enough pain and trouble in the world already. In fact, Jesus, you remember what he said? In this world you will have... Yeah. He was honest. He said, you know, it's a broken world. Get used to that. You broke it, by the way, not me. But you broke this world and now you're living with that. There is a lot of it about. But listen, isn't it a tragedy? The real tragedy is when we have to face that stuff, but then we add to it. I was just aware, yeah, I'm going to get hit by trouble in life, but I'll just add to it. I'll just create some of my own. Isn't that a tragedy when we do that? Isn't that crazy? Why would we do that? What often causes self-inflicted trouble is this. There's a little confusion in our minds about two things, pleasure and happiness. We get confused about the relationship between the two of those things. Last week we talked about the relationship between money and happiness, didn't we? And we said money and happiness are connected. They are connected. We don't believe the myth, you know, that statement as we walk by somebody's palatial home and said, oh, they're not happy. We don't believe that, let's be honest. That's the truth. There is a connection between money and happiness, but it's not the word more. What word is it? Managed. And we talked about that. Money contributes to your happiness if you manage it well. It's not about how much you have. And we know people with lots and with little who are happy. It's not about the quantity. It's about how you manage it. And that's what Jesus told us. This week, I want to talk to you about connection between pleasure and happiness. Let's talk about that little connection and what that looks like. To get there, I want to start with some words of Jesus, and we read them earlier on. This is what he said. The thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. Now, a thief in Jesus' eyes is someone who steps into another person's life and as a result steals something from that life, kills something in that life, or destroys something in that life. That's what he's talking about. When he's talking about thief, that's what he's talking about. Some relational thing that's going on and it steals something, kills something, destroys something. That's what he's talking about. Could be anything. Could be financial. Could be relational. Could be emotional. Could be spiritual. But a thief is a person whose relationship with you damages you. That's a thief. And some of us get tied up sometimes with the wrong people, and they act like that in our lives. They just damage our lives sometimes, don't they? That's the truth. Now, here's a bit that you don't want to hear. This is a bit, you'll probably switch off at this point, because you think, oh, no, not going there, Phil. Thank you very much. But you need to just bear with me for a while, and I'll prove to you it's true. But this is a bit you are not going to want to hear. This applies to you if you're over. This is for adults. This is about adults I'm talking about. I'm not talking about children here. Talk about adults who have choices and can make decisions for themselves, yeah? Adults, over 16. So here we go. If you are over 16, who in your life is the person with the greatest capacity to do those things to you? Who is the person in your life? Who is the thief? The person who is able to kill, steal, or destroy something in your life. Who has the greatest capacity and opportunity to do that in your life? Who is it? The bad news is the same answer for everybody in this room. It's the same person, oddly enough. Do you know who it is? It's you. You have the greatest capacity to steal, kill, or destroy something in your own life. You really do. You really do. You are your own thief. In fact, in our culture, we have a little phrase. And it's not out of the Bible, but it ought to be. And this is the phrase, I am my own worst enemy. You've heard of that, haven't you? And it's true, isn't it? Sometimes we are our own worst enemy. I know you don't want to hear this, but you are, and I am, my own worst enemy often. Because if we're honest, we have done more than anyone else to undermine our own happiness often. It's been our stuff, hasn't it? It's been our decisions. Here's how I know you are your own worst enemy. Here's how I know. I know because you bought it. I know because you took a loan out on it. I know because you ate it. I know because you drank it. I know because you smoked it. I know because, this is extreme, you dated it. Seriously. And then you might even have married it. And was anybody holding a gun to your head? Did anybody force you? Sometimes I am my own worst enemy. I do it to myself. And when you think about your unhappiness as an adult, you were there for all those choices, weren't they? Nobody was forcing you. You were there making those choices. It was your choice. We are, aren't we, the common denominator in all of our life. We are. And as much as we want to blame others, and we do regularly, don't we? We always blame everybody else. We want to blame others. The truth is, often I am my own worst enemy. I chose those things. I made that choice. Jesus says, the thief is the one who comes into your life and steals something, maybe something about the future, kills something, maybe something about a relationship, destroys something, and quite often, not always, but quite often, it's me. It's us. We do it to ourselves. So Jesus goes on to make this extraordinary statement, because if I'm my own worst enemy, here's the alternative. My purpose, says Jesus, is to give them a rich and a satisfying life. John 10, verse 10. That's not a bad translation. That's the NLT. NIV puts it like this. I have come that they may have life and have it to the what? To the full. Yeah, full life. So Jesus, that's the new NIV version. I'm not sure either the NLT or the NIV really capture this word that Jesus is using in the original, and I think the older versions are actually better. They really, you know, we're going back quite a way, but if you pick up a really old version, it will say this: I have come that they might have life and have it abundantly. I love that. That's a better translation, I think. Just abundant life. That's a really good translation. It's much better work. The Greek lexicon says that this word that Jesus used, they'll have more life, they'll have full life, they'll have abundant life. This word that he uses carries the meaning pertaining to that which is not ordinarily encountered. In other words, Jesus says, I can offer you a life that you would not ordinarily encounter. I can offer you that sort of life. That's wonderful, isn't it? That's what he's offering. And it's not extraordinary, he says, because you don't have any difficulty, because this world is broken, and in this world life you will have trouble, says Jesus. It's not that you have a trouble-free life. It's not because you've been handed everything on a plate. It's something that God gives you if you follow his invitation. It's something that is internal, not externally driven. And Jesus goes on to say how you get that life, that abundant life, not the ordinary life, but an extraordinary life. He says this: I'm the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. I'm not the ordinary shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for his sheep. Let me just say this to anybody who's here who doesn't normally come to church. This is really important. If you're new to church or you just need reminding of this, this is really key. Whatever you read in the Old or New Testaments, whatever you read in the whole of Scripture, the context for everything you read in the Bible is this, actually. It's this verse. This is the context for the whole of the Bible. Jesus came to be a good shepherd who sacrificed his life for us. And listen, somebody who sacrifices their life for you, they are for you. They are for you. That's the context of the whole of the Bible. God is for you. God is for you. He's come to do the opposite of the thief. He's come to give, not steal. He's come to build, not kill. He's come to protect, not destroy. He's come to do exactly the opposite. He's for you. So we have a decision to make, don't we? We have a decision to make. Jesus is inviting you to follow the good shepherd, because there are only two. There's my own worst enemy, there's me, who makes decisions and chooses stuff without being forced, never being forced usually, but I make interesting decisions. Or I can follow the good shepherd. That is the invitation Jesus is making. That is the choice. Now the problem with Jesus' invitation here is the terminology he uses, which turns every self-respecting person off, doesn't it? He compares you and me to sheep. How many of you ever want to be compared to a sheep? Yeah, exactly. Bleh. Sheep are not smart. And Jesus says, you're like sheep. Thanks, Jesus. Appreciate that. Some would say sheep are not just not smart. Some would say sheep are stupid. Sheep are stupid. But listen to me. You shouldn't be offended. Shouldn't be offended that Jesus uses the word sheep. You know why? Here's why you shouldn't be offended. Because of that. Because you bought it, you loaned it, you ate it, you drank it, you smoked it, you dated it, you married it, the list isn't long enough, is it? I couldn't fit them all on. Are the things we do. And the bottom line Jesus is saying is this: you have made some very bad decisions. That's what Jesus is saying. And he's right, we're sheep. We make stupid choices. We go home and we think, why did I just buy that? Now I've got to pay for it. It's on the credit card. I don't really want it. I got bored with it after 2 weeks. And yet a month later, the credit card. You know, why did I do that? And we do it all the time, don't we? Jesus knows what he's talking about. We are often our own worst enemy. We do this to ourselves. So he says, I'm a good shepherd and I want you not to run your own life. I want you to let me be your shepherd. I want you to trust me. That if you do, you won't just have any old life. You'll have a life that is not ordinarily experienced. And if you trust me as your shepherd, that's what it will look like. Now, you might be your own worst enemy, but you're not your only enemy. There is another enemy that you've got to tackle with, and that's that word sin that we've talked about before in this series. However you define sin, and we've just defined it very simply, the stuff that we know and everybody else knows we really shouldn't do. Let's just leave it at that. Let's not go into theology. But sin is the stuff I know is a bad idea. Don't do it. And the Bible almost treats sin as a personality. If you read the Bible, it almost says sin is a sort of power or a force in our lives. So it's almost got a personality to it. It's almost like another person. And remember what we said about sin? Sin does what? It separates. That's the other problem in our lives. Not only am I my own worst enemy, I've got this force, this power of sin going on in my life, and it separates me. It separates me from God and from others and from myself. We talked about that, didn't we, in a previous message in this series. The reason relationships break down. Why they break down? Somebody did something they ought not to have done. Sin. It separates. It does it every time. And using Jesus' words, you could almost adapt his verse here from John, and you could say this. Sin comes only to steal and kill and destroy. So this isn't looking good for us, is it? So not only I've got enemies without and within with sin, I've also, every time I look in the mirror, I realise I'm my own worst enemy as well. There's a heck of a lot pushing me to live life like a sheep in a stupid way. There's a lot moving me that way all the time. I don't think this is news to anybody. I don't think this is news to anybody. We've all got history, haven't we? We've all done things that were sheep-like. But here's the question, why? Why do we do it? Why do we keep doing that stuff? Even though we know and we experience it and then we go and do it again, why do we keep doing that? A big part of why is, let's get back to this word, pleasure. A confusion over the link between pleasure and happiness. Do you know that God created you with a capacity for both of those things? He really did. His original plan for you is that you experience both of those things a lot of the time. Isn't that wonderful? So pleasure is not, you know, un-Christian. Pleasure isn't. God created things like sexual pleasure. He did. He created things like that. And one day God said, you know, I've got this great idea. And the angel said, what is it, God? And God said, you wouldn't understand. You're going to have to be human to experience this one. And he was right. Humanity experiences that pleasure in a way the rest of creation doesn't. I mean, we sang a song at the beginning of the service. What was the song? Do you remember what the song was? Something you turned into something. Remember that? Water you turned into wine. Remember Jesus' ministry? I'm always a bit surprised at this, because when Jesus started his ministry, he turns to his disciples and he says, okay, boys, here we go. 3 years, we're gonna turn the world upside down. How are we going to start? And the boys probably said, well, you could heal someone, Jesus. Or you could, part a sea or something, Jesus. You could do something like that. Said, Jesus, no. What are we going to do? We're going to make wine. And they go, what? And that was his first miracle. And he made a ton of wine. Gallons of the stuff. God is not against pleasure. Pleasure is God created. It is good. The problems start, here's where we get confused about pleasure and happiness. The problems start when you prioritize pleasure over happiness. Let me define what that means. Happiness always leads to pleasure. But pleasure can undermine your happiness. Have you ever experienced that? Pleasure in something starts to get out of control and starts to undermine your happiness. Do you know what I mean by that? If you pursue pleasure but undermine the principles of happiness, and I'm talking about the stuff we've been talking about, so what makes you happy? No thing. So things don't make you happy. Relationships, people do. So if you ignore that principle and pursue pleasure instead, you're going to be in trouble. As what was the other principle about happiness? No thing. What was the second one? Sowing. That it's not immediate, that it takes time, and it's deliberate over time. That you sow your and reap your way to happiness. If you ignore that principle and you prioritize immediate pleasure over that principle, you will run into trouble. That's what Jesus means. When we prioritize pleasure over happiness, we undermine our own happiness in the long run. You end up, in fact, losing both. Here's why. Because eventually, pleasure loses its pleasure and it becomes a prison. We know people who have found pleasure in things that has become a prison to them, don't we? We can think of them. It's because of the law of diminishing returns. At first, it's half a glass, and that gives you pleasure. But then it has to be the whole glass. And then it has to be two glasses. And then it has to be a bottle. And before you know it, you're yelling at people, and you can't remember the day before. The pleasure starts to control us. It's because over time, every single legitimate pleasure that becomes a priority when we prioritize pleasure over the principles of happiness, it eventually loses its pleasure. It weakens. The law of diminishing returns. And what begins as a pastime becomes a pathway, and then it becomes a habit, and then it can become an addiction, and then it becomes a prison. Pleasure can do that to you. If we prioritize it above the principles of happiness that Jesus mentions. And these things aren't illegal, they're not immoral things, but when we prioritize pleasure over the principles of happiness, pleasure loses its pleasure over time. The Apostle Paul wrote to some Christians in Rome and explained this a bit more. This is what he said. Don't you realize that you become a slave of whatever you choose to obey? It's common sense, isn't it? If you continue to obey a pleasure over and over again, and you can now no longer say no to it, it's not that, you know, it's almost like it's taken on a little bit of power over you. Now you can't say no. Now you have to. Now there's this drive that you can't control. If you continue to obey a pleasure over and over again and say yes to it again and again and again, don't you know, says Paul, you're becoming a slave to it. It's becoming a prison. That's going to undermine your happiness. If you choose something over and over, you're no longer choosing. You keep choosing and you can't not choose. You're no longer choosing. You're losing control. You can't say no. This is what he says as he carries on talking about this. You can be a slave to sin, which leads to death, or you can choose to obey God, which leads to righteous living. So you can be a slave to sin. That thing that we said always separates, and it always kills. Whenever we do stuff we shouldn't do, it always kills something. It always leads to death. It always separates. You can be a slave to that, says Paul, if you want to. You have that free choice. Or you can choose to obey God, which leads to right living. Paul says, don't you realize every day you choose to obey a pleasure, to prioritize a pleasure, you are giving up your freedom. You're no longer free to choose. But you can choose to obey God and become his servant. And then we end up full circle back where Jesus started. What was Jesus' invitation? I am the good shepherd. Follow me. Obey God. Follow me, says Jesus. And here's what he tells you if you do that. Jesus would say, here's what you need to do. You need to sow better. You need to reap better. And that will make you feel better. If you trust me and do it my way, says Jesus, if you obey the principles of happiness before pursuing an immediate quick fix pleasure, this will make you feel better. When you feel unhappy, it's the opposite of what we do, isn't it? When you feel unhappy, what do? When you feel unhappy, what do? You probably don't do this. What do? You do something that makes you feel better fast. Something gives you pleasure fast. Isn't that where the trouble starts? I'm unhappy, so I'm going shopping. Men, never let your wife do that. If she's unhappy, don't let her go shopping. If I'm unhappy, blokes are just as bad sometimes. We go around and we buy stuff, gadgets on the internet. We'll do that. I'm unhappy. The last thing you want to do is go shopping. Trust me. Just a quick fix. I'm unhappy, so I'm going to the drinks cabinet. I'm unhappy, so I'm heading to the fridge. I'm unhappy, so I'm going to pick up the phone and call that person. What do we do when we feel unhappy? We do something to make ourselves feel better. We don't start sewing better. We just try and fix it with a quick pleasure injection. That's what we do. We prioritize pleasure over the principles that Jesus says we should do. Jesus' message to every unhappy person is this: there is no quick fix. If you are unhappy, there is no quick fix. Doing the I'll make myself feel better thing doesn't work. Do what Jesus says. Do that. Sow better. So then you will reap better. And in the end, you will feel an awful lot better. Do it his way. You sow and you reap your way there. Happiness cannot be accessed instantly. Saying yes to a quick fix, here's what happens. Saying yes to a quick fix over and over just to feel better will undermine your happiness because you will become a slave to it. You will become enslaved. That's what Paul said. You won't be able to say no after a while because it's the only thing that makes you feel better, even though it's getting less and less effective. And we all have a quick fix, don't we? When you're unhappy, what's your quick fix? Have a little think. I won't ask you to write it on the board or anything. Have a little think. What is your quick fix? I feel unhappy. I'm just going to make myself feel better. What is your quick fix? That thing that you reach for to make you feel a little bit better. What we should do is that. But what we do is reach for something, for a quick fix. There is no quick fix. It doesn't exist. Instead, we need to sow better, to reap better, to feel better. That's why following Jesus long term will make your life better, abundantly better. That's why Jesus says, I'm a good shepherd. I'm your good shepherd. Will you trust me? Will you follow me? But it's not instant. It's not a quick fix. It's sowing over the long haul. So the question for today, for you to wander off and think about, is this. Is there a pleasure... Oh, I don't know why there's a long gap there. Is there a pleasure that is undermining your happiness? Is there a pleasure that is actually undermining your happiness? Not necessarily a sin. Might be something you might not, shouldn't do. It might not be a sin. It may not be immoral or illegal. It may be perfectly legitimate, but it's become prioritized over everything else. Be honest, is there a pleasure that you've said yes to so many times that's beginning to undermine your own happiness? Is there a pleasure that has the potential to undermine the happiness of those that you love? Of those around you? Is there a pleasure that you're struggling to say no to? Here's another question. Is there a pleasure that is slowly taking you prisoner? Are you slowly losing the freedom to say no to something in your life? You know what? If you ignore these questions, one day you'll wake up and you'll discover that you are your own worst enemy. You will discover that you are, in fact, much to your great annoyance, a sheep. And you really do need a shepherd. So perhaps, because there's a lot of trouble in the world and we don't want to add to it personally, do we? Perhaps to save ourselves a lot of unhappiness for the first time, would we be willing today to trust the Good Shepherd with our lives and follow him? Jesus says, I want you to follow me. I want you to stop being the thief in your own life. I want you to walk away from all other thieves in your life. And he promises, this is great, listen to this. He promises, if you do it his way, principles of happiness, if you do it his way, he will not drain you of pleasure and of life. He will lead you into life, full life. Abundant life. He will do that for anybody who trusts him enough to follow him. And to be honest enough to realize, sometimes, you know what? I am my own worst enemy. Will you trust him? As a church, I suspect, as most churches, most of us have that struggle between surrender to God or just sort of arranging God around my life. You know what? We often get it wrong. And the big wrestle in every church I've ever been in is people who are saying, I'm going to put God in the center and I'm going to arrange my life around him. I am not going to live my life and arrange God around me. I am going to ask him to be my shepherd. I'm following him. He's not following me. I'm following him. And to commit for the very first time, even as Christians, to make him Lord of our lives. If you do that, he says, I'm a good shepherd. You'll have life and you'll have it in all of its fullness. And you won't add to the troubles of this world by being your own thief. Can we trust him enough to do that? We're going to sing as we close. And it's a song you know very well, from a psalm you know very well. And it just talks about the Good Shepherd. It says this is who he is. And the chorus is this: I will trust. I'll trust that if I do it your way, Jesus, I follow you wholeheartedly now, Jesus, that it will work out. Can I trust the Good Shepherd? Let's stand together.